Session number 20957, Reel 2.
Jack Salter, Reel 2.
Right. Well, Algiers caved, the French caved in, obviously. And we then moved up towards Bone Aerodrome. Well into, on the coast. We were guarding the landing strip for the fighter pilots, for the fighter planes on Bone. And we were bombed every night by German planes because there was a solitary farmhouse about half a mile from the aerodrome. And then we went on another landing. The First Army were pushing through from Green Hill and around there. And the weather was atrocious. It was just like English winter time. We did a landing. The commando, plus the Americans, the paratroops tried to take the aerodrome at Tunis, but the Germans got there first. And we settled down. We landed, and we took over hills, overlooking the road from the front line, expecting the First Army to break through within a couple of days. Unfortunately, they were held up, and an armoured column of Germans, armoured column, attacked our position overlooking the river after about 7 days. We had no rations otherwise, other than the eggs we used to buy off the Arabs and the chickens, etc.
Do you know whereabouts on the North Africa coast this was?
Yeah, it was Bizerta, not far from Bizerta.
And what was the countryside like?
Scrubby. It was oak trees, all that area on the coast is lots of short oak and shrub. It's like a jungle, really. We took up our positions, and there was a mosque on our left, on the top of the hill, and early that morning, I think it was, on about the seventh day, this German column came from the front line to dislodge us. I was overlooking the road with the Bren gun, and Corporal, I can't forget his name, he was a steeplejack in peacetime. And he said, when this is all over, you come on me, Jack, and I'll take your steeplejack, and there's money in that. Anyway, this German tank fired at the mosque. I'm at about 60, 70 yards, and we were just brewing up. Well, I'd got a chicken in the mess tin, and the Captain Davis rushed round. He said, "What was that?" And I said, "Chicken." "Bloody fool," he said. "What was that?" I said, "That was a shell. There's a tank down there. Just hit the mosque with its first shell." And of course, then they had armoured personnel carrier, and they started to get out, and we opened fire, good and proper, on this column. And we had no heavy equipment at all. All we had was sort of riding order again. And we looked around, and we hit this armoured. It was only about 50 yards. We were sitting on top of the hill, good position. Anyway, we looked round and they'd been told to retire. So the corporal and I said, yeah, they've all gone. We hadn't heard them withdraw. So anyway, we got along the riverbed, the pair of us, and about half a mile along the riverbed, a German tank came across the hill at the back to cut off. So the Arabs were pointing towards us, showing them where we were. So we scurried along this riverbed, then joined up with the others. On the way back, it must have been 30, 40 miles, they killed a cow and carved it up, you know, so we all carried a piece of meat each. And then we got back to Sedgenine, which was a iron mine, a French iron mine, and a prison camp. So we were there for some time. Anyway, finally we got sent back to England. We did about 6 months out there, I suppose. Came back to England, did some more training, went to Wales. No, we went to see, the memory goes a bit.
This is not Winchester.
Winchester. I went to Winchester, and there we took on new recruits. Because we lost a lot of men in the meantime. The Americans in the meantime had been disbanded from us and to their own Ranger battalion, is what was left of them. Winchester, and we did a bit of mountaineering up at Snowdon from, and we had one of the Everest expedition, the early expedition climbers training us. Anyway, we got ready for the trip to the Far East then. My wife and I got married on the 15th September 1943 after a lot of trouble because we, you know, they were stopping the leave and what have you. Cancelled a number of times. Anyway, we were married about a month. In October, we were sailing to the Far East. Again, ship got hit by a bomb in the Med near Alexandria. Disembarked Alexandria, stayed in the tent encampment in the desert. Until a relief ship picked us up, or we went down to Port Said, I think. Got on the ship there. One of the things that reminded me was going down the canal and seeing camels walking along the bank that we'd seen on photographs years ago, you know, previous to the war. I ended up in Bombay, disembarked, went to various camps, training. We was a brigade. There was five commando and us and one commando. We spent most of our time jungle training near Goa.
What did that consist of?
Goa was part of Portugal, wasn't it?
Yes.
Yeah.
What was the jungle training like?
Oh, pretty rigorous. We sort of got used to it. We had choggles of water. You know, they were sort of canvas bags which evaporated to keep it cold, you know, and different big things they were. And we used to use them for as carrying the water in. But we had no real transport. You know, for long distances we went by train. One train journey was about 3 days from the north to the south, down to Ceylon. We did patrols on the Arakan. Lost another officer when we was on the first patrol on the paddy fields. We did, in North Africa, we did long patrols in North Africa beyond the lines, mining their roads and setting up ambushes, and OPs for the artillery. So that was in North Africa. I've forgotten all about that. But we ended up in the Arakan, where we did landings on Mai Bon Peninsula. Funny thing there. I dug foxholes. We used to dig foxholes for defensive positions. And no sooner I'd got into the foxhole than a porcupine dashed through the jungle on top of me. It ended up me out of the hole and the porcupine in the bottom. This was during the night. Next morning I tried to lasso it. We couldn't shoot it because of the enemy being close. I tried to lasso it with the toggle rope that we all had, a toggle rope, so that we could join up the ropes for making bridges and that sort of thing. And in the end, I gave it a swipe with a lump of wood, and it jumped out, and that dashed away. And Bill Ling says that it fell on him next. Quite comical, that was. It was a big one as well.
What was the landing at Mai Bon like?
Oh, it was muddy. We was up to a waist in muddy water, Mai Bon. It was unopposed, actually, that part of it. But then we came back again, and we finally went to Kangor. It was a landing up the Chongs. Ah, that's right. So Kangor village, it was a village which straddled a communications road, and we were there 7 days. The brigade was there on different hills for 7 days, so we were well dug in. And poor troop, I was then a corporal, and then I think I made up sergeant at the time, and we got well dug in. We used to dig in on a perimeter. We didn't used to have a straight line. It used to be around the hill top with the headquarters in the middle and the firing positions all within about 2 or 3 yards of each other. At that time I was the demolition man for the laying of booby traps at night, so I used to go out, lay Bangalore torpedoes and the hand grenades in the tins, the tripwires, and then every morning I'd go out with another bloke and we'd disarm them.
How successful were they against the enemy? How successful were these?
Well, we had a number of probing attacks at night, all at night, you could hear them moving around the base of the hill. This particular day, I was given orders not to put the booby traps out because the Indian troops were relieving us the next day and they wouldn't, you know, understand them or know where they were. Anyway, the next morning around about 4 o'clock, a terrific barrage of artillery and mortar fire hit us, and we were under attack all day, lost a lot of friends there. Old Snipe Lander, he'd been a friend of mine for years, ever since he came from Cambridge, and he was married. Snipe Lander, yes, good old boy he was. Anyway, he came up as a reinforcement with a counterattack, that's right. And he had a bush hat on instead of his berry. And I said to him, "Hey, Snipe," I says, "take that hat off. He said, I think you're the brigadier." And next minute he shot through the head. Lost poor old Snipe. Anyway, when the evening came, we were relieved by the Indian troops. The Japanese attack had been pushed back. We had fighter planes firing and we had artillery from the ships and on pontoons. Yes, the OP, which obviously is up the front, for the artillery, were knocked out in the early stages, so we passed some messages back, you know, mouth to mouth, you know, up 200 for one. In the end, you know, it used to get confused and rapid fire, you know, so once the OP had been knocked out, we were a bit vulnerable then. Anyway.
About how long do you think you were in those positions?
Well, that was all day. From early morning, about 4 o'clock, the Japanese blew up the only three tanks that we'd got down at the foot of the hill with pole charges. And that was the beginning of the attack. And it went on. Anyway, we repulsed them, and I think they counted 400 dead. That was in that short time.
Could you see them using the pole charges?
No, the pole charges were... We were on this end of the hill, I'll show you later on, and the tanks were laying back, you know, in leaguered further back on the paddies, on the paddy fields. It was dry. And we heard the explosions, didn't know what it was, until the shells started rapidly, you know, landing on our position.
What was the name of this hill?
The name of the shells?
Of the hill.
Oh, it was Hill 170, Kangor. It's well written up, you know, the account of it. But numerous counterattacks were made through our position to try and dislodge the Japs, and we lost a lot of men in those. Oh, and another one. Oh, yes. A chap got wounded down the bottom of the hill before this. And I went down to see what was wrong, you know, to see if I could get him. And as I stood at the bottom of the hill, I heard a rifle go. Well, I heard the smack of the rifle just above my head in the tree. So it was obviously a sniper. You can't see where the snipers are, but I ended up in the ruck of the where the tank trap had gone. It's a bit of cover. But that was That's just another little incident that happened.
Would you ever see the Japanese enemy?
Hmm?
Would you ever catch sight of the Japanese enemy?
Well, I didn't. The only time I saw them was when, you know, after the battle, and they were dead. You know, and some of the chaps even, I forget his name there. See, the hill was like this, and they came across a paddy field from the from that direction, and I was round the side, so I didn't get the same attack as the forward troops did. But two of the lads were in their slit trench, pretended they were dead because the Japs took the first to three trenches, and pretended they were dead, and the Japs were standing on them during the night, or when it got dark, and they managed to slip out after the Japs had withdrawn. They were very lucky. King. That's right, Private King. Ooh. Kingy. Anyway, that's as far as we got. That was our biggest battle.
Were there any Royal Marine commandos with you?
Yeah, the 42 and 44, I think it was. 42, 44 Royal Marine commandos. And 5 commando. A full brigade we had out there. Funny, the Marines never dug in at night. They only dug shallow places to lay in. You know, just to... And when we went past through their lines, is that only protection you've got? About 6 inches. And said, oh, we always dig in wherever we go.
Do you think that was sensible?
More than sensible, yeah. Well, I suppose it's a training you do. You say, right, stand here tonight, dig in. Especially in the jungle, because you don't know how the attacks are going to come.
Was it easy to dig in there?
Yeah, it was quite good digging. And we Captain Cowart, he got wounded in the attack on Maibon. You'll have to excuse me a minute, I'll go back.
So, at this hill, you had the job of doing the booby traps?
That's right, yeah. That was. I had a subsection, you see, about 10 dozen men, I suppose, in my subsection. And you had a lot of NCOs in the commandos.
And you say you were with 4 Troop?
4 Troop, yeah.
Had you been with 4 Troop in North Africa?
No, I was in 5 Troop then.
What happened after Kangor?
After Kangor, we went down to, well, of course the Japanese were just, you know, getting beaten at Imphal, and we took Akiab, that's right, we landed at Akiab.
What was that like?
An opposed landing. From there, we went down to Madras, we went on leave for a fortnight. Bill Ling and I went into a big house by the river. Sir Norman Strathy, he lived there with his housekeeper, and all the servants were in livery all the time, and we used to dine with them at night. Yeah, we had lovely meals there.
Just the two of you?
Just the two of us. Others were billeted in other places, and we had free use of these tennis club, I think it was, in Madras. And there used to be brigadiers, etc., being entertained by Sir Norman. And we were the had meals with them as well, drinks afterwards, telling them how the battles should be fought. They were quite interested, they were. Well, from Madras, I think we ended up in Ceylon. Trincomalee, the naval base at Trincomalee. I think I've got it down there somewhere. Lovely place, always wanted to go back there. We were in huts alongside the sea, palm trees growing out from the sand, you know, beautiful. We then more or less got ready to go to Malaya. We were in a camp. We had a troop party. Well, we should have a troop party before we met, went into action or anything like that. I had a few bottles of beer, and I was standing singing on the form, and the Saint Hilaire, he tipped the form up, and I fell on my arm, broke my wrist. Now that was, a bit stupid thing to do, because we were there, we would get, embarking the next day. So I said to him and the rest of them, look, Hilaire didn't do that. I tripped over a guy rope on the way back to the tent. So next morning, of course, I sat in the guard room with, terrible pain, man. And next morning, Captain Cart wanted to know what happened. And I said, I tripped over the guy rope, And I got a feeling he thought I tried to get out of going on the invasion, which, I'd never dodged a column at all. So he said, is that right? I said, oh, yeah. So sent me up to the hospital, have it set. And he said, right, you can be the quartermaster sergeant now, he said, because you can't use a weapon. You'll be the quartermaster sergeant. Got on the invasion fleet to go. We were on our way to Malaya then. We had all the maps of where we were going to land, the barbed wire and what have you was all shown. And so it was a silk sort of map. And halfway there, of course, they dropped the bomb, the atom bomb. And we carried on then. We carried on to Hong Kong to take over from the Japanese there.
What happened to you at Hong Kong?
We went into what was called Murray Barracks. And I remember the sergeant's mess had a lovely painting of Hong Kong Harbour on the wall. And I always wanted to bring that home with me. Beautiful oil painting of Hong Kong Harbour. Anyway, we rounded up all the Japanese. I was looking at caves where the Japanese had got their explosives, like gelignite, and it was very dangerous because it was running. The explosives packed in there. Well, we did patrols and anti-pirate patrols. Stanley was a lovely place. That was where the governor lived on the island. Beautiful roads. And then we've got on an American Liberty ship, right, put in about 500 of these Japanese prisoners in the holds, and went up to, I think it was Kobe in Japan, disembarked there, had a look round the town, had a look in...